propriety in relation to the approval of your early retirement or full pension benefits. So just bear with me, Mr. Pala. I'm going to come to you in a moment. And I would like to be put on the screen the timeline of cases which we had referred to in the context of Mr. Johan van Lochenberg's evidence, so that we can just remember to remind members in the context of this process to do that. Right. So I had indicated at the time that the first timeline was not the subject matter of the evidence given by Mr. van Lochenberg at all. What had happened was that two reports had been issued, the one related to the pension fund, the other one related to the SARS unit, and in that second one, it also related to Mr. Pillay's qualifications. So Mr. Pillay's evidence will span both reports in that regard. I'm going to start off with let's call it case 36099 firstly. And to give you a brief background at what transpired. The report had been issued on May 29, 2019. An urgent application was launched by Minister Goddam against the report dealing with the early retirement of Mr. Pillay on 28 May 2019. It is important to remember that the main applicant in that matter was the minister. On 5 June, and Mr. Pillay at that stage was cited as a respondent. On 5 June 2019, Mr. Pillay launched his intervention application to intervene as a further applicant in the matter and to seek in his own right the review and setting aside of the public protector's report. There was no opposition to this intervention application. Between 30 September and 2 October, the application was argued in the High Court. The High Court's judgment was handed down in December, in which the public protector's report was reviewed and set aside with costs on an attorney-client scale. I will come back to the judgment in a few moments because there were cost orders that went in favour of the public protector in respect of an interlocutory application, and then there was cost orders in respect of the applicants, lest I be told that I'm only doing one aspect of it. The public protector and advocate and Kabani then launched leave to appeal the application in the High Court, which application was dismissed with cost. There was also a cross appeal that was also similarly dismissed. There was then a petition to the Supreme Court of Appeal by the public protector and advocate and Kabani, and the petition was dismissed with cost by the Supreme Court of Appeal. These become important because at some point we're going to be asked the question of presenting to this committee legal costs. And whilst it's currently a work in progress, we will spend some time explaining to the committee how legal costs operate. The public protector and advocate in Kabani then, pursuant to this petition, dismissal of the petition to the appeal court, launched a reconsideration in terms of the rules to the Chief Justice. This was similarly dismissed. Subsequent to the dismissal by the FCA of this application, they petitioned the Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court dismissed this petition with costs. So that's case number one, right? The next case, and we'll just briefly go to it because just to refresh your memory, we went through this case in some aspects. We dealt with Part A and we went through the judgment of Potterell J in relation to the SARS unit matter. I didn't take you in detail in relation to the second judgment, although we dealt with certain aspects of it. And we're going to touch on certain paragraphs in this judgment, which Mr. Pillay would like to pertinently draw to this committee's attention. Now, in this instance, this is where the classified report of the office of the that was prepared by the office of the Inspector General comes back into play, and we've spent quite a bit of time on that, right? And what we will then see if you go further on the path that I'm going to be dealing with go down. Similarly, Mr. Pillay had deposed on the 29th of September 2019 to an affidavit in support of the minister's interlocutory application, and as did Mr. Van Lochenburg. In August, Mr. Pillay launched an application to intervene as a further affidavit and to review and set aside the public protector's report. Again, his intervention wasn't opposed. In August, there was an application for leave to appeal to the Constitutional Court in respect of the Part A of the application which we dealt with. Let's go down on this. Right? I don't want to be dealing with Part A of the application today. I'm dealing with Part B of the application. So what transpires in Part B of the application after Part A had been dismissed by the Constitutional Court in May 2020 is that the High Court hears Part B of the application in August 2020 and the hand-down judgment in respect of that. And it's this judgment in which there is orders made against Advocate Mkabani in her personal capacity, and there are a range of other orders which I will also come to. Right? If we go down, just to take us to its transgression, there's the various levels of appeal. And in this case, the appeal is still before the Constitutional Court and no judgment has yet been handed down. So it's an important distinction to be made in that whilst in respect of case 36099, the proceedings are finished. In respect of the second case, there is still one judgment outstanding before the Constitutional Court. Right? Now, I am not going to take you through all Mr. Pillay's affidavits. Number one in bundle E. Right? But I am going to highlight the affidavits, and we will see that the initial application in 3609, as I pointed out, there is a founding affidavit at number, that's the right one. Yeah, go for it. And the reason I'm taking you through the index is because we mustn't lose sight of the fact that it is these affidavits that serve before the courts and which the judgment is premised on. And so at some point, and these affidavits have been commissioned, they constitute evidence, we will need to look at some of these affidavits, right? So the case starts with the founding affidavit at number 5 of Minister Gurdam, go down. Right, there's lots of annexures. We then come to item number 54. You will see that there's an affidavit from Mr. Pillay, and at 58 you will see Advocate Mkabani's response to that affidavit. You will then go to 66 and 67. You will see that there's the replying affidavit of Minister Gurdam, Mr. Pillay, which served before the court. And if we go down, just go to 81, 82, we'll see the Rule 53 record and supplementary record, which is filed at court by the public protector. And if we then go down to 91, we will see the application for leave to appeal made to the court itself, and the application for leave to cross appeal at 91 and 92, 98. If we then go further down at 101, we will see the affidavits filed at the Supreme Court of Appeal and the answering affidavits in both the appeal and cross appeal that both was refused, right? And if we go down to 114, 115, we see the respective responses to it, as well as the application to the Chief Justice to which I referred you to. And then if we go, I think at this point I probably lost theme is highlighting, but let's go down at 126. We will then see, like I said, the applications of the Chief Justice. And at 139, again, you see the affidavit of Mr. Pillay in that process. Then we come to 143, which is the application for leave to appeal before the Constitutional Court, which was brought by Advocate Mkabani, and the answering affidavit. Well, let me not. And then the answering affidavit by Mr. Pillay in that regard, together with that. Right. So that's the one case index. And if we go to the other case index, we will see, and you'll find that at number 7, the first item. Let me just... Yes, thank you. Right, at number 2, you see the opening affidavits. And then there's lots of annexures. At number 35, you will see the Advocate Mkabani's answering papers. And at 41, I just want to draw this distinction to you. You will see Mr. Pillay's affidavit then as the 8th respondent. Right. At 55, you see that there's an intervention by the EFF, together with an affidavit from Mr. Malema, and he attaches certain documents there too. At 58 and 59, you'll then see a replying affidavit from Mr. Goddam at 61. At 69, you will see what is recorded as the first and second respondents answering affidavit to the 8th respondents affidavit. That is Advocate Mkabani as the public protectors. The public protector is the first respondent and Advocate Mkabani is the second respondent. When they talk about the 8th respondent or the second applicant, it will be Mr. Pillay. And you see that from 74, he puts in the affidavit of his intervention application, and at 86, attached to that is the affidavit which Mr. van Lochenberg spoke to as to what he filed, and which was before you when he gave evidence at 86. All right. So there is numerous other affidavits by the various parties. I do want to draw, I don't want to waste time taking you through each one of them, but the point I'm trying to make is that there are several affidavits filed by both Mr. Pillay, and to which Advocate Mkabani responds, or which is filed by Advocate Mkabani, to which Mr. Pillay responds. And it is those affidavits which informs the judgments. And so I'm briefly going to take you to the judgment, which is attached to Mr. Pillay's affidavit. Right, let's just see if it's one or two. Mr. Pillay's affidavit is to be found at Bundle D. And it will be what's annexure VP1, the judgment of 3609.
Professor? Yes, Advocate Mpofu. Just pause, Advocate Bauer.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I had my hand up, but you probably didn't see it.
My apology.
No problem. Thank you, Chair. Good morning again, Chairperson. Yeah, I just want, if I just didn't want to interrupt my learned friend, I want to place one or two things on the record and raise an issue for the sake of formality for your ruling. The first is that the, in fact, it's appropriate that I do this now, after you've seen the scope, you know, and the thousands and thousands of pages that we're going to be dealing with. The first issue pertains to the issue of relevance once again. And it is in the context that of what Advocate Bauer has correctly pointed out, that as far as the, let's call it the retirement case is concerned, that one has run its course and it is has been concluded. But as far as the rogue unit matter is concerned, it's still pending before the Constitutional Court. You remember we went through this before Mr. Van Lochenberg's testimony. We just want to place on record again that as far as we're concerned, the rogue unit matter therefore is still in the court pipeline, and the retirement matter, as far as we're concerned, is completely irrelevant to what is happening here. Or as I did yesterday, I'd like to invite the evidence leaders to tell us in respect of which part of the motion the retirement issue is being raised. And subject to your ruling, well, I think we know what your ruling will be, but I have to do what
you,
I have to
do. You don't know. You don't know.
I know. Well, I have an idea, Chair. Yeah. But please. Maybe you're right. I don't know for sure.
I wouldn't want to be anticipated.
Okay. No, apologies, Chair. But subject, if my hunch is correct, then the next question then comes in, which is the sheer extent, Chairperson, of both, assuming your ruling is that you're going to allow them to deal with both matters, then the sheer extent of what we have to deal with means that I can tell you now we're not going to finish with this witness today or tomorrow. Well, I know tomorrow is a Saturday, but as I said, we're ready to continue wire. But the on a serious note, Chair, I think it's, let me try to make two submissions. One is that your allocation of time is in any event unfair, because, you know, the rule of thumb is that cross-examination takes two times or even three times of what the evidence in chief would be. So your allocation of equal time for the evidence in chief and the cross-examination is just inherently unfair. Yeah. But be that as it may, in this particular case, there is just no way that we can cross-examine on these thousands of pages in the time allocated. So I'm almost, as I say, 100% sure that we're not going to finish with this witness, even if we had an extra day, particularly if I'm right about what your ruling will be on relevance. Now, Chair, I'm raising that upfront so that firstly, so that we get the ruling, but also you don't have to, on the question of time, don't have to deal with it immediately. It's just an issue that I'm raising because it's clear. I think anyone who has been involved in this process by now will know that if we could take a full day with a witness like Mr. Matlango and finish at 8 p.m., who has a 15-page affidavit, you know, without annexures even, then, if we have 6,000 pages to wade through and 100 judgments that Ms. Bauer has spoken about, and the Constitutional Court and affidavits, answering affidavits, intervening affidavits, two public protectors reports, the rogue unit, this and that, I mean, to think that that is going to be done in a matter of a few hours, if there is justice, is just completely unrealistic. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to put those two things on the record and to ask for a ruling on the first one. Oh. or the other side, maybe the misspelled.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu.
Relevant. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I am going to recognize her so that she can speak to us about whether what you refer to, if she wants today, that we deal with a mountain of issues. Advocate Bauer?
Chair, the point of having taken you through that exercise was to say to you, those have all been considered by the court.
Just pause, Advocate Bauer. Honorable Kevin Milam, you are disturbing us. Please mute. Thank you. Advocate Bauer, you were indicating something.
The point of taking you through those affidavits was not for purposes of leading the evidence on those affidavits. The point of taking you through those affidavits was to show to you there are affidavits on the one hand by the parties who brought the applications. The public protector had an opportunity to answer the allegations in those papers before the court. Those were the factual and legal submissions contained in those affidavits and the arguments which informs the judgment before you. And that is the framework which served before the court, which informs the judgment. And it's those judgments which have made findings against the public protector in some instances and findings for the public protector in respect of certain arguments against the based on huge amounts of papers which served before the court. I certainly don't intend taking Mr. Pillay to those affidavits today, nor do I intend taking you to the affidavits of Advocate Mkabani today. So we are not going to be leading evidence and cross-examining. Well, I can't say what Mr. Wolf is going to be doing, but I'm certainly not going to be leading you on the evidence. There are judgments. There are judgments that have made findings against the public protector, and it's those judgments which have informed this process. There are specific judgments before this inquiry, and Mr. Pillay is one of the people who, pursuant to a call from this committee to provide evidence to this committee relevant to the motion before this committee, who had come forward in that public submission process and said, I wish to place an affidavit before this committee and in which I wish to make submissions for it. And in order to sketch the context of that, there are two judgments which underlies Mr. Pillay's basis for submissions, and they are attached to his affidavit. In doing that. And those are the judgments relating to the SARS unit and the judgments relating to his pension. I'm certainly not going to spend hours on dealing with the pension. I'm going to highlight the salient parts of the judgment in the course of taking Mr. Pillay through his evidence and his affidavit to do that.
So by and large, you're placing these issues for record in this committee.
Yes. In order for the committee, we've gone through various witnesses and each of them has various cases. There are thousands of pages in affidavits underlying the CX judgment. There are thousands of pages of affidavits underlying the Freda Dairy. And the committee needs to have an understanding that these judgments don't get plucked out of the air. They are informed by affidavits which the parties place before court, which constitutes the evidence which informs the judgments before this court, before that court, in various instances. And there are affidavits at various levels of those courts. But the judgments which come out has got certain orders and certain ratios that are binding. And whilst Mr. Pofu and I may disagree on the extent to which you rely on those judgments, that's an issue that has to be argued at some point, in which Mr. Mpofu will certainly tell, I'm sure, the committee where he disagrees with the judgment. My only point that I sought to make to the committee this morning is that Mr. Pillay has filed numerous affidavits. On the basis of those affidavits and Advocate Mkabani's answer to those affidavits, or Mr. Fale's answer to Advocate Mkabani's affidavits, is what informs the judgments which is attached to his affidavit, which is before you today.
Okay. Thank you for that clarity. Advocate Mpofu?
Thank you, Chair. Okay, just briefly in reply, yeah, I mean, I'm not entering the space about whether the committee can rely on judgment or not. You know what our views are on that. I've raised two issues. One has not been answered, which is relevance. So I'm assuming then there's no relevance. But as I say, I'm still confident of what the ruling will be. But the
relevance on the pension one.
Yeah,
is that what you asked?
That's the issue I raised, which has not been answered. But as I say, I'm doing it for formality
I don't want you to do things for formality. Advocate Mpofu, just pause. I don't want you to do things for formality, because if you do that, it would mean that you have got a committee and a chairperson that is has got a completely predetermined mind on any issue. It would not be correct that I'm
projected wrong, yeah.
That way. Yeah, no.
Thank
maybe
you. No. We are open. We are ready to be proven wrong. We have an open mind, as they say in the Weekly Mail case. No, sir. I'm not even there on the predetermined outcome. I'm simply saying I've raised that issue, it has not been raised. But the more pertinent issue, Chair, that I'm raising is this. I appreciate what Advocate Bauer is saying, and she will tell you, I'm the person who proposed that we start early today. It was my suggestion that we start at 9, because this was all in aid of trying to see if it's possible to finish Mr. Pillay. Because I know he's overseas and all that. I'm telling you that I'm not prepared, or rather the public protector is not prepared to accommodate to the extent of unfairness. And I'm simply saying, on what has been put to you, the scoping that has been put to you, and Advocate Power is right, I have no control, whatever. She might want to ask one question, that's her prerogative. But as far as the cross-examination is concerned, because when she puts those issues, she didn't put them there just for decoration. She put them there because they have relevance to some of the issues that she wants to argue at the end. And I'm simply saying, Claire, that on that basis, I don't want to be dramatic, but it's impossible that this witness will finish today. And I'm telling you that as the chair, so that you keep that at the back of your mind. Because we're not going to be bulldozed into asking 3 or 4 questions just so that we meet some predetermined timetables in this regard.
Yeah, no, that. Thank you. The timetable will be determined by the chair. I'm firm on that. And when that time comes and there are problems, we'll always consider that. I have
sure.
no problem
Thank
with
you,
that.
Thank you,
Advocate Bauer, just your last point on the relevance of the pension issue that which is in the affidavit.
It's dealt with in Mr. Pillay's affidavit. And
yeah.
Unless I'm going to waste more minutes having this debate, Mr. Mpofu's already taken 15 of my minutes.
Okay.
Chair, I have to react to this. I'm sorry. I'm not expecting miracles. So what, Chair, it's not an answer to say that somebody put something in their public reaction to the invitation. I mean, that just opens a whole new can of worms. Because what that means then, your version, Chair, of events is that you are guided by the motion. And you know our views about that. But even now you are going even beyond the motion. Now you are telling us that you are going to also include as relevant to the motion things that came 2 months ago, which never went through past the independent panel report for prima facie filtering, even at a level of pretense. You know, so if that is how this committee is going to run things, then we must be told. Because we can't be told that something is relevant, which was not part of the motion. Your own directives say that something is relevant if it talks to the motion. And I'm simply asking a simple question, which part of the motion is the pension issue going to talk to? I have no answer to that, except to say that it's part of some public submissions, which we were not consulted about. Nobody told us that they were how to react. We asked whether this will form part of the evidence. I asked you specifically, Chair, in a letter which we wrote to you in May. And we were assured that there's, because we said if there's going to be new evidence that comes as a result of the public input, then we need to have out the alteram partem in respect of that. And your response was, no, that's just for public participation, I'm paraphrasing or whatever, but it's not part of the motion. But now we're told that it is.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I'm putting it on the, I know what's going to happen, but I'm just putting it so that I'm never accused one day that we were acquiescing in this unlawful and illegal procedure.
No, thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Just to make the point, yesterday you would have raised certain objections and they related to a certain matters on a different matter, and today you are within your own right raising some objection about the issue of relevance on a different issue. So there is never a one-size-fits-all kind of a ruling. There will never be a one-size-fits-all ruling from the chair. And so I wouldn't want you to invoke any raising issues just for formality's sake. Because we're not there in the way we interact, in the way we're running this process. Two things, because I think you, in your credit, you would have raised these issues up front. We differed in terms of our own directives and terms of reference, but the differing with you does not mean we're going to bulldoze our way. As a committee, as part of the fairness, we've got to listen to the issues that you're raising. As I would have, just two things, as I would have indicated yesterday, let us in terms of 8.2 see as this committee what the issue of the pension in terms of its relevance would be. And in that sense, I would rule on the provisional determination on the issue, as we also did yesterday, because I think the committee has got to make that assessment and apply its mind, having heard what evidence would be laid here. And when we do that, it is not ignoring the points you're raising, and I hope you take it in that spirit. The last point, I am going to ask that I think for the coming witnesses that, as suggested yesterday, both yourself and the evidence leaders, some of these matters must be attended to before. They're not just raised when we start the hearing, because affidavits, the fact that we have a list of witnesses is known by both teams. And both teams know what this witness is going to be focusing on. And I'm asking that be attended to by the two teams, and where there are challenges, I think as a chair, I would come in, so that it doesn't come across that one of you is taken by surprise or one of the teams is just ignored in terms of the issues that you are raising. So for us to cure that, I think it will be proper that we, and it will be better than when you come in and say, we have discussed this, we don't agree, and I'm placing on record, and I would accept that. at that particular point. So I would make that request as we go forward. Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. May we proceed, Advocate Bauer?
Thank you.
Just before we proceed, there's Honorable Melder.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My apologies. When Advocate Mpofu just now made his point, he said he do not want to be blamed later that he said this and that and the other because while participating in this illegal and unlawful procedure. Did I hear him correctly?
Yeah.
My problem is this. He says it is. Okay, fine. So the point I'm making is that I want Advocate Mpofu to make up his mind. You can't have it both ways, sir. When you started with these proceedings, you said right in the beginning on day one that you respect this procedure, you respect Parliament, and you are participating voluntarily in this procedure. When you put your arguments in front of the Western Cape Provincial Court, the High Court, you also argued that this procedure is unlawful and illegal. Do I understand it correctly that your view is that this procedure is unlawful and illegal, but you are here under protest, or what is your position? You can't have it both ways. And then I just want to say from our side, it's my perspective, this procedure is absolutely legal and it's absolutely lawful in terms of the law of the country, in terms of the resolution taken by Parliament, and we cannot accept this kind of slur being thrown at this committee on a Friday morning. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson?
Thank you, Honourable Melder. I'm wanting to proceed. I'll acknowledge you, Advocate Mbofu.
Yeah, I'll be very brief, Chair. No, I think as a member is out of order and they should rule him as such. I have said from day one here that we are participating in this process, but our view is that it is illegal and irrational, and I spent half a day explaining why, and it was debated by this committee, and our presence here was accepted on that basis. So if Honorable Mulder is a judge and he wants to tell us that it's legal, that's his privilege. But I'm just telling you our version, and I know that there is a version, a counter version by other parties in the court case. So it's unhelpful for me to hear Mr. Mulder's judgment on the pending judgment of the High Court. I'm simply telling you where we stand on the issue of legality. And it's not to say something is illegal is not disrespect. If it's illegal, it's illegal. I'm here. So we're here to participate. But we have a view about the process. And
sure.
Nobody's going to bully us into their own view.
All right.
Thank you,
Advocate Mpofu. As I proceed to Advocate Bauer, just to re-emphasize the point I would have said all along, that this Section 194 committee that I'm chairing, I'm not presiding over an unconstitutional, unlawful. I think we respect the view that you share, which you placed and ventilated in court, and there is no court that would have declared our process unlawful and unconstitutional. And
oh,
so
constitutional. And there's no court that has declared it constitutional either.
No, don't interfere with the chapter.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. Yeah.
Yes.
I apologize.
Thank you. So I therefore want to proceed. Advocate Bauer?
So if we can now turn to Mr. Pillay, who's been waiting patiently for his evidence to be read. Mr. Pillay, are you there?
Yes, Advocate. Yes, I'm here.
Right. Now, you deposed to an affidavit which one finds in our bundle D at record page 1543, and it was pursuant to the process followed by the committee asking for public submissions, correct?
Correct.
Sorry, Mr. Pillay, you submitted your affidavit following the public submission process. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I did.
Yes. Okay. And attached to that affidavit are the two judgments, the one relating to the pension matter and the one relating to two issues primarily in the other matter, one the SARS unit and your and the issue of your qualifications. Correct?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
The third annexure relates to another report that has been issued by the public protector in relation to an entirely different matter. Yes. Correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, if one then turns to the matter dealing with the SARS unit, paragraph 128 of the judgment, and that would be judgment, which would be 2, the second.
Please repeat the paragraph.
128. Of the judgment.
Yes.
Right. It indicates that you had previously been employed at SARS, you had various senior positions within SARS from 1999 to May 2015 when you left its employ. It then details those positions to be the chief manager, chief investigations, chief officer enforcement, chief officer strategy and enablement, and deputy commissioner, as well as acting commissioner. And that the SARS unit had the HRIU unit, formerly known as the SPU unit and renamed the NRT unit, had reported directly to you from inception in July 2007 to March 2008, correct?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Right. And then at paragraph 5 of your statement, you point out that you had been investigated by Advocate Mkabane in a capacity as the incumbent public protector and found guilty by of maladministration and misconduct in 3 matters on which she published reports. Two of those reports, the evidence that you had provided to her was entirely ignored or irrationally dismissed. And with regard to the third report, which was, I think it was published in May 2022, you had not even been informed by the public protector that you were implicated in an investigation by her and that she intended making adverse findings. That's in paragraph 5 of your affidavit, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and that is the context in which you have come to give evidence before the committee today.
That's correct.
You then in your affidavit, so we'll call the latter report the third report. If we can just maybe put a if you can just bear with me for a second. I mean, sorry, Mr. Pillay. Right. In respect of the third report to which you have referred in your affidavit at paragraph 9.1, you've indicated that in 9.1 that there were serious adverse findings made against you and remedial action in the form of a criminal investigation. And did you receive any notice in respect of this report?
I received no notice.
Any invitation to attend an interview?
No.
We then caused court papers to be issued on the 25th of May 2022, asking for the report to be reviewed and set aside, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So now let me take you to the judgment, which is next to your affidavit marked VP1, which is the judgment relating to your pension, let's call it the pension matter. And one sees from the judgment and the report that it emanated from an anonymous complaint relating back to matters as far back as 2010. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that the matter related to what was in essence the minister's approval of a recommendation by the then Commissioner of SARS approving your early retirement with full pension benefits and your then retention as on a fixed term contract thereafter.
That is correct.
One sees that from paragraph 8 of the judgment. And the judgment essentially finds that the judgment essentially in the course of its ratio finds that the public protector had in the first instance not applied section 6(9) of the Public Protectors Act correctly and did not have jurisdiction to deal with the matter. It then finds in favor of the public protector that on certain in limine points, that certain averments that occurred in Mr. Goddam's affidavit be struck out. And then the court goes on and it looks at the various grounds of review and it finds that they are merit in a number of the grounds of review and it essentially sets the report aside. Would that be an accurate summary of the gist of the court judgment?
Yes, it is.
Right. In paragraph 11 of the judgment, it sets out the remedial action, the findings and the remedial action of the, as it's been ordered by the public protector. And in this matter, were you served with a subpoena and did you appear before the public protector at all?
Yes, I did.
And by the time this matter got heard, the matter in relation to the SARS unit had already been handed down, correct?
Correct.
And the full bench in that matter had dealt with the ambit of section 6(9) and the question of special circumstances. Correct?
Correct.
And if one looks at paragraph 41 of the judgment, in terms of the background to it, the issues that the court said that occupied its attention revolved around the point in time at which the special circumstances must exist and be judged for. In fact, it was common cause that the complaint had emerged in 2010 and that the two-year-old criteria had already passed. And so what the court was debating, or the debate around court, was at which stage of the process before the public protector was it necessary for special circumstances to exist. And I won't take you through the law on this issue, but one can see from paragraph 51 of the judgments that the upshot was that the special circumstances required in Section 6(9) of the Public Protector Act must be in existence at the time the Public Protector exercises a power to permit the entertainment of a complaint which is more than 2 years old. She must use these factors when she exercises her discretion whether or not to permit. For the Public Protector to exercise her discretion properly at the time of such exercise, she must have all the facts before her. It does not avail her to say she remembered other reasons later on. And this was at the time in line with the established SCA dicta that reasons must be given at the time when a decision is taken, and also the then full bench decision that was given. Now, if one then goes in paragraph 54 and 55 of the judgment, one sees that it says the fact that the Public Protector dealt with this issue in this haphazard manner is an indication to us that she failed to understand this fundamental jurisdictional requirement, or she simply ignored it from the very outset. It is also an indication that she does not know when to exercise her discretion in terms of the section. This leads to an inference that when the Public Protector commenced with the investigation in this complaint, there were no special circumstances in existence. Relying on GEMS, which binds this court, and the following on Gordon, where there are no special circumstances, the Public Protector lacks the necessary jurisdiction in terms of 6(9) of the Public Protector Act. And the court then concluded that based on Section 6(9), the Public Protector had no jurisdiction in the matter, and it said in 56, our finding is dispositive of the entire matter, axiomatically the report which flows from the impugned decision that must be set aside. Correct?
Correct.
Right. But the court then goes further and, apart from the absence of jurisdiction, concludes that the report is fundamentally flawed and falls to be reviewed and set aside. And if one goes to paragraph 123 of the judgment, there were a number of grounds which were argued and which dealt with that, and I'm not going to take you through all of them, but what the court says is we have the view that the errors of law committed by the Public Protector in coming to a decision and our findings is material, and so as we shall show, and they then deal with the said findings in detail to show that the Public Protector was wrong in law and that Minister Kodam's decision was perfectly lawful, and that there was a mistake in law which was material, rendering her findings irrational. And the court then deals with those in the course of its judgment in a number of paragraphs, dealing from paragraph 132-33 onwards, and we won't necessarily deal with those in details But in essence, it comes to the conclusion that the public protector's report was irrational. In that regard, correct?
Yeah.
Right. And the ratio is contained. The report also concluded, and if I take you to 215 and 16 of the judgment, the public protector had concluded that the payment of 1.258 million by SARS paying the penalty amounted to an irregular expenditure premised on the fact that Minister Gordhan had acted unlawfully in approving the full pension benefits, and the court had concluded that this happened by operation of law and required no approval by Minister Gordhan at paragraph 115, 16, 17 and onwards, and it's then set aside in paragraph 218 to 24 onwards, the remedial action is considered and set aside.
It is so.
That is so. But there was an added complaint by Minister Gordhan in paragraph 224. He raised the complaint that the public protector did not allow him an opportunity to make representations on the remedial action being ordered. Can we go down? And paragraph 2026, the court records it was common cause that the public protector had not afforded Minister Gordhan a hearing on the remedial order she had made against him in section 7-9 notice that the public protector has sent. I think the had you been given notice of any remedial action, Mr. Pillay?
No.
And the court then
just try to get closer to the mic so that we can hear you properly.
Yeah.
Mr. Play.
I was not given any notice.
Thank you. That's much better.
That's a remedial action.
Thank you. That's much better. Advocate Mbofu, I see your hand.
Yes, sir. No, I was just taking advantage of your intervention. I've had my hand up and you're not recognizing me. I don't know. Maybe is it because my hand is black?
Well, you created it black. Not you.
Right. Thank you, sir. No, I wanted to check you for my notes. I wanted to check whether I correctly heard Advocate Bauer when she referred to what she called the ratio of the decision.
So, Mr. Mpofu, we can have an argument later about...
No, I'm simply asking if I heard you correctly. I'm not arguing
yes,
anything.
Yes, you did.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Advocate Bauer. Thank you, Advocate Bauer.
Thank you, sir.
Right. If you just give me a moment, Mr. Pillay. Mr. Wolf has just assisted me in losing my train of thought. Just give me a second. Mr. Pillay, you were successful in opposing the appeals, and I'd already pointed out that in respect of the pension matter, the application before the public protector's application for leave to appeal before the Constitutional Court was dismissed with costs, correct?
That is correct.
Right. And this was after several courts had held that there was no reasonable prospects of success on appeal. Correct?
Yes, it is so.
Right. I'm now going to take you specifically to the judgments dealing with the SARS unit under case number 48521, which would be the first annexure to your affidavit.
Yes.
If one goes to paragraph 133 of this judgment, the court said, in determining whether the public protector's findings were rational, it is important to ascertain what processes she followed in coming to the findings and what evidence was available to her when she made the findings. As a starting point, it is necessary to briefly deal with the complaints against Mr. Pillay as set out in the subpoena, which was delivered to Mr. Pillay by the public protector on 10th April 29, and the notice in terms of section 79 of the Public Protector Act. Now, excuse me just for a moment.
Chair, I think that's the wrong paragraph. I'm not following.
Come again, Honourable Error.
Advocate Bauer referred us to paragraph 133 of the judgment and then read something that is not in paragraph 133.
Sorry,
okay.
Go to VP2. I said we were moving on to the judgment in relation to the SARS unit, and I didn't tell our operator that that was a separate judgment. My apologies. Yeah, and so it would go to paragraph 133. I apologize for doing this, but the operator is using a different version of the judgment that I am, so I can't give an easy page reference to do that. And effectively, what I read earlier on was that Mr. Pillay had deposed two affidavits, one dated 23 April 2019, in response to the subpoena, and identified in the judgment as the first affidavit, and one dated 18 June 2019, which was the second affidavit. Is that that's recorded in the judgment? In paragraph 8 of your affidavit before this committee, you refer to the report on the investigation into allegations of violations of the Executive Ethics Code by Mr. Praveen Gordhan, as well as allegations of maladministration, corruption, and improper conduct by SARS. This is the report that was issued on 5 July 2019, and which is the subject matter of this judgment, correct?
That is correct.
Right. Now, it was suggested to this committee that Minister Gordhan was the primary target of this report. Would you agree with that categorization of the report?
Comrade Chair, It is difficult for me to say exactly, but if I understand it, that the term came from an earlier discussion. I have always felt that there were bigger issues at play, and that it was actually the capture of SARS. And that is the reason why so much of pressure was brought to bear on us in SARS and many other people in the country. So I've never felt that I was a personal target. I don't know whether that answers the question. Thank you.
Mr. Pillay, if you go to paragraph 150 of the judgment, there were five adverse findings made against you by the public protector that is detailed in the judgment.
Yes.
130. And it's detailed in the judgment. You've got, right, under separate headings. One, that SARS, under your guidance and management as general manager, enforcement and risk, established an intelligence unit in violation of the South African intelligence prescripts. Two, that you were involved in a failure by SARS to follow proper procurement processes in the procurement of intelligence equipment, which the intelligence unit utilized for gathering intelligence. Three, that you were involved in a failure by SARS to follow proper recruitment processes in appointing employees who worked for the intelligence unit. Four, that you were involved in carrying out irregular and unlawful intelligence operations, and then it details those in that regard. And that five, that you were appointed to the position of Deputy SARS Commissioner and subsequently as SARS Commissioner whilst you did not possess the necessary qualifications for the positions. Would it be fair to say that these were adverse findings that were made against you, irrespective of how you wanted to categorize who you wanted to categorize as the primary target of the report?
Yes, through you, Chair. These are very, very serious allegations.
And how did that impact on you?
Well, I'll have to go back a bit, and that the problems really started towards the end of, towards the latter part of 2014, when I was suspended in SARS, and I finally left SARS. And there were two attempts to criminally prosecute me. There was a continuous barrage of smears in the Sunday Times for a long period. And the public protector's reports and findings then come on the tail end of that. So it's been one long a series of attacks from 2014, and it still continues because there is a third report that is current, and the second report, though there is a judgment that stands, public protector has applied for leave to appeal to the Constitutional Court. So it's created turmoil in South Southern Institution. It's created turmoil amongst many staff members of SARS. I think perhaps up to 2,000 people left SARS in that turmoil. And it's caused turmoil, obviously, amongst our friends and family. Thank you.
Now, you joined the application as a co-applicant, and your case was fundamentally premised on two points: the absence of special circumstances as foreshadowed in Section 6(9) of the Public Protector Act, and that the Public Protector had failed to obtain evidence and relied on unsubstantiated allegations, ignoring evidence provided by you, resulting in the report being set aside by a full bench as irrational, procedurally unfair, and fraud. At paragraph 132 of the affidavit, it details in summary what you have set out, and that in effect the issue of your qualifications, you had not been asked of this in the Section 7(9) notice with which you had been served. Correct?
Correct.
Right. You... Right. And then one sees that at paragraph 162 of the judgment, the court details some of the affidavits that I have already referred to earlier on that had been put before the court in its consideration of this matter, and you are the deponent of quite a number of those affidavits.
Yes.
You confirm that?
Yes, I confirm.
And then in paragraph 163, let me take you back. You had previously provided, you had informed the Public Protector, both Advocate Mkabani, as well as her predecessor in 2014, who had also received complaints regarding the SARS unit. You had provided them with information, correct?
Correct.
And you pointed out to the court that the predecessor had elected not to further investigate the complaints in relation to the unit, but focused on complaints concerning irregular recruitment.
Yes, it is so.
Right. Right. And if one looks at paragraph 163, then the court refers to a supplementary founding affidavit that you had filed after the final documentation in the Rule 53 record was provided. And in the last line it says it contained and it confirmed that the documentation that you had provided in 2014 formed part of the record which served before the Public Protector when she compiled her report. Correct?
Correct.
Right. And if then one goes to paragraph 2, well, let's just see which paragraph I'm on at the moment. Go down one. Okay. One then goes to 192. Right?
Yeah.
Of the judgment. And Mr. Pillay, I want you to take it, the judgments from here, because if you look at your affidavit at paragraphs 8.3 and 8.4, you say that in the course of the public protector's investigations relating to the SARS investigate unit, you gave extensive evidence of the public protector and provided them with comprehensive explanations and relevant documentation. This was all done under oath. The public protector simply dismissed my evidence out of hand, preferring to rely on untested hearsay and gossip to make her findings. During the subsequent review proceedings, I again detailed evidence, and I provided the evidence on oath of Mr. Johan van Lochenburg, who was the head of the SARS investigated unit at four material times. This evidence was the only evidence provided to the public protector under oath, which dealt directly with the activities of the SARS investigative unit. The public protector dismissed my evidence out of hand as simply being my views and opinions. She did not deal at all with Mr. van Lochenburg's evidence, and we've already heard Mr. van Lochenburg's evidence in that regard, and it wasn't contested that his evidence was not dealt with. You particularly in your affidavit highlight from paragraph 192 of the judgment, and perhaps you can share with the committee those paragraphs emphasizing particularly what you wish to highlight. That's at paragraph 192 of the judgment.
Thank you, Chair. So paragraph 192. This is further evidenced in the way the public protector approached Mr. Pillay's evidence in the review application. In her answering affidavit, she adopted a dismissive attitude to what she termed Mr. Pillay's views and dealt almost exclusively with Mr. Gordon's various affidavits. This is clear from the following passage taken verbatim from her answering affidavit. The public protector was not bound by Mr. Pillay's views on affidavits. She considered them but found they were a defense of an indefensible establishment of a spying unit within SARS. So that's paragraph 192. Paragraph 193, she then set out a number of points on which she expressed that she was in disagreement with Mr. Pillay's views and dismissed the entirety of what was deposed by Mr. Pillay in his two affidavits in the following terms. The rogue unit narrative is their coining, which is irrelevant to the public protector. The views of Mr. Pillay on state capture are just that, views. Mr. Pillay did not wish to candidly and openly deal with issues that the public protector was interested in. His response was belligerent and displayed a lack of interest in giving the public protector coherent and straight answers to questions asked. The allegations made by Mr. Pillay were vague and speculative. They were riddled with political narratives, totally irrelevant to the specific issues that required the public protector to investigate. Mr. Pillay attacked the investigation and questioned its legitimacy based on his political theories of state capture and false political narratives. I disagreed with Pillay on the legal basis for the establishment of the spying unit within SARS. His explanation sought to avoid giving credible and straight answers, but windy and verbose. Mr. Pillay waffled about the so-called rogue unit narrative and the capturing of SARS, giving no credible evidence. That's paragraph 193. And then we go to 194. It is important to note that no other party in these proceedings, including the Public Protector and the EFF, has sought to respond at all to what Mr. van Lochrenberg testified in the affidavit deposed by him. What he says thus stands entirely uncontradicted and unchallenged. The Public Protector has put up no facts or evidence, either in the report or in the affidavits filed in this matter, that refutes the evidence provided by Mr. Pillay and in brackets and now by Mr. van Lochrenberg. All that she has done in her answering affidavit is belabor evidence put up by Mr. Pillay as simply his views and opinions, and that she was not bound by.
Okay.
And then we go to paragraph 195. This evidences the most egregious failure.
Yes, I've noted you. I just want him to finish the sentence.
I'll start again. This evidences the most egregious failure by the Public Protector to understand and honor the most basic requirements of the office she occupies. It is plain that the Public Protector has approached this investigation with an unwavering commitment to her own preconceived views and biases. The manner in which the Public Protector had and continued to simply ignore Mr. Pillay's evidence clearly demonstrates her manifest bias. We will return to the issue of bias herein below.
Thank you. Just pause there, Mr. Pillay, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Okay. No, sorry. I didn't want to disturb Mr. Pillay. But, Chairperson, really, this is a mighty waste of our time. We can't have a situation where Ms. Bauer brings a judgment, she reads it, then Mr. Pillay reads the same judgment, and we read the judgment yesterday, and we're going to read it again tomorrow for ourselves. I mean, for what practical purpose is that? Apart from the fact that the judgment is an opinion of a court, so if we're going to have a witness here simply to repeat and reread the judgment as if we can't read for ourselves, then what's the point of all this?
Okay, I get your question. Thank you, Advocate Bauer.
I would have thought the judgment is binding on everybody, and we can have that debate later. Mr. Pillay wished to emphasize certain parts of the judgment, and he is doing so. He is entitled to give his evidence as he wants to. When we spend 45 minutes on other stuff, then we don't bother about wasting the committee's time.
So,
I've not recognized you, Advocate Mpofu.
Sorry, sir.
I want us to proceed. You've just asked a question. The purpose for doing this, it's been explained, and I want us to leave it there and proceed with Mr. Pillay.
So you accept, but that's what we must do in this committee. It's just a read judgment.
That's not what you're saying.
You say we must proceed on that basis.
Yeah, no, that's not what we're doing. There's an emphasis on certain paragraphs. So I think, please, let's hold back, Advocate Mpofu.
No, Chair, I'm sorry, Chair. Without any disrespect, Chairperson, I really need, because I don't know where this is going to end. We have 500 pages of this thing. And I'm just telling, just if you or Ms. Bauer can tell us what is the value or purpose of what has just happened in the last 10 minutes. Of reading a judgment that we've all read without even saying anything about it, can't we read and then just allow it on the basis that because there was an objection earlier, therefore we must have our time wasted. I mean, that's even more.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. You have your point recorded, and the point being made is that Advocate Bauer wants to make certain emphasis, and he's leading the witness in that regard. Advocate Bauer?
Can I suggest that I ask my colleague to, I would get done a lot quicker if we can just refrain from constant interruptions.
Thank you. Mr. Pillay?
No, that's not an interruption. I'm raising a point. Why do you call it an interruption? I'm raising a point about wasting our time. I'm not going to sit here and listen to 500 pages
Advocate
of reading.
Advocate Mbofu, I don't appreciate you just without even recognizing the chair. I do not appreciate that.
I'm sorry.
Please.
I'm sorry.
Advocate Bauer?
Mr. Pillay, and it was those findings in the judgment which you sought to highlight to this committee. Is that correct?
Yes, there are a few more paragraphs, but I'm in your hands.
I'm going to take you to the few more paragraphs that you want to highlight to the committee, Mr. Pillay, in that regard. If you go further in your affidavit, the High Court, you say in your affidavit that the High Court reflected at length on the manner in which the public protector had assailed your dignity. Firstly, by irrationally finding that you were unqualified to be appointed as a deputy commissioner of SARS, and second, by going to the extreme or even denying you your matric certificate in a campaign to impugn your dignity. Now, can we just, in dealing with the matric certificate, can you... we just take it back for a second, and we don't have to go to the judgment to do that. But the judgment, there was a complaint made against you.
Chairperson?
Your hand is not raised.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. I'm just trying to be helpful here. I was saying, Chair, just to be helpful so that we don't have this to-ing and fro-ing and wasting more time. On the basis of what was proposed by Honorable Heron, I want to place on record that we admit that what is typed here in this judgment is there, and all other judgment.
Thank you. Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Advocate Bauer?
Mr. Mbofu, I understood from the start of the proceedings that you also admitted that the contents of what is contained in the affidavits of Advocate Mkabani are also what they purport to be in the affidavits. Am I correct?
Am I under cross-examination now? No, I'm not. I didn't even hear the question. I was just placing something on record. You can ask me offline whatever you want to ask me.
But why, Mr. Mbofu, do I need to go offline to do that? The affidavits are under oath, and I'm assuming we're not going to have a debate about the correctness of the affidavits.
I don't know what you're talking about. I was just placing something on record about this witness. So whatever else you want to raise about other affidavits, we'll deal with it when we deal with it. I don't even understand the question. I was just trying to avoid interrupting this witness by reading off judgment. I'm saying we admit the judgment is there and it was given by the court, and what is typed is what is typed.
And do you admit to the accuracy of the judgment, Mr. Mbofu?
The person, I'm not there. I don't know. What are you talking about? How can I admit to something that's so blatantly wrong? All these judgments are wrong, factually and otherwise. They say, one of them says that the public protector said she didn't read the IGI report, which she never did, which is not true. How can I admit something that's not true? And one of them says that she said that she referred the vulnerability of the Reserve Bank, and your witness said it was his. Must I admit all that fake news?
Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Advocate Bauer, I want you to proceed with leading the evidence. Advocate Bauer, kindly want you to proceed with leading the evidence.
Thank you. If one goes to the judgment at paragraph 134, and we don't need to go there, there was a complaint made against you that in paragraph 7 of the subpoena, and the court notes that the issue of your qualifications was not raised in the subpoena issued to you, but raised in the subpoena issued to Mr. Gordon.
Yes, it is so.
And at the time the report was released, the public protector knew that you had a matric certificate.
Yes, that's true.
In paragraph 235 of the judgment, there are the contentions in Advocate Mkabani's affidavit and the submissions made on behalf of the public protector was that the public protector had made no finding that you had no matric and that you had not provided the information about your qualifications when you were asked to do so. In fact, paragraph 235 of the judgment, could you put it up again? Which one we'll see from it's also in your affidavit.
Yes, I have. Do you want me to read it?
Yes, please, Mr. Pillay. Just confirm it.
I confirm it. The contention in the answering affidavit and submissions made on behalf of the public protector and the public made no finding that Mr. Pillay had no matric and that Mr. Pillay did not provide the information about his qualifications when he was asked to do so is disingenuous. Firstly, the conclusion that Mr. Pillay had no degree and no matric was central to the public protector's finding that Mr. Pillay was not qualified to be appointed as a deputy commissioner of SARS. Secondly, it is an indisputable fact that Mr. Pillay made a full and accurate disclosure of the extent of his academic qualifications as at the time when he joined SARS, when he testified under oath to the public protector on the 24th of March, 2019. Thirdly, in the subpoena which was delivered to Mr. Pillay by the public protector on the 10th of April 2019, Mr. Pillay was called upon to respond to 12 complaints. Notably, Mr. Pillay was not required in the subpoena to deal with or to provide any information whatsoever on his qualifications. And then the last paragraph, 236. Accordingly, at the time of the report, the public protector well knew that Mr. Pillay had a matric certificate, a conclusion in the report that Mr. Pillay does not hold even the basic qualification, notwithstanding the fact that on 25th March 2019, she accepted that this was a matter of public record and was within her knowledge is astounding. In doing this, she has manifested clear bias against Mr. Pillay and material irrationality in arriving at her findings. In her answering affidavit, the public protector has put up no evidence supporting her findings in this regard. We submit this further demonstrates that the public protector closed her mind and adopted a process of irrational reasoning. Thank you.
Mr. Pillay, to your recollection, did you have a meeting with Advocate Mkabani at which your qualifications was discussed?
Yes, I do recollect the meeting.
And did you confirm with her that you had passed matric as your highest qualification?
Yes, I did.
Now, the court concluded that there was no requirement that only a holder of a degree could be appointed as a deputy commissioner of SARS or hold an acting appointment as a commissioner?
Yes. At that time.
Would you have regarded that to have been the end of the matter?
Yes, I would have regarded it to be the end of the matter.
And was it the end of the matter? I mean, I'm phrasing it badly. The matter, despite the court's findings, went through several courts of appeal and is still pending.
Yes, there is a judgment, but the matter is still pending.
Now, in respect of that issue, you have start with that. You say in paragraph 10 of the affidavit that you have been embroiled in endless litigation with the public protector for several years now. Recently, having obtained finality in the judgment from the Constitutional Court, has your attorneys prepared bills of costs?
I spoke to them last night. They are preparing the documentation, and they indicated to me it's in the region of about 4 million rands.
And those are the untaxed bills of costs? Correct. And those are the costs that would still have to be recovered from in relation to the court orders that have been issued. And you accept that from that would be deducted any cost orders that had been made against you in the proceedings in relation to the interlocutory matters? Now, in the context of the report in the OIG matter, you had pertinently raised this in the affidavit that you had filed in the proceedings before the High Court. Isn't that correct?
It is correct.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Pele, I'm just trying to find the reference to make it easier.
We will, at this point, take a 15-minute tea break. We'll be back at 12. We'll pause for tea break. Thank you. At 11. I have 12
recording
in my mind.
Stopped.
Yeah, we'll proceed with our virtual
11. We'll be back at 11. Thank you.
I have arranged tea for those on virtual tea. All of them.
check, Mr. Pillay, are you there? Mr. Pillay? Mr. Pillay?
Hello, I'm unmuted. Yes, I'm here.
Mr. Pillay, are you there?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Thank you. Before I proceed to Advocate Bauer, so that, and I was calling you several times, at some point, I don't know, you would have done that by mistake, referring to me as Comrade Chair. I'm the chairperson and the chair of the committee, not Comrade Chair, in case it's not repeated. Thank you very much, Advocate Bauer.
Sorry, Mr. Pillay, let me just take you back to the issue of your certificate so that we can be clear, having just taken you generally to the evidence so that the committee can see it. You deposed to an affidavit on 25th September 2019. This is the affidavit to which Mr. Van Lochenberg's affidavit was attached. For you, it's at bundle D, 2.4, right? We'll just show it on the screen so that you can see it. That's what confused me, right? This was after you had intervened in the main application in respect of Minister Goodham's complaint that the public protector had failed to deliver a complete 53 record, and you detailed the documentation not provided. And in paragraph 6 of this affidavit, sorry, I'm just give the a second to put it on the screen.
Recording in progress.
I don't want to put Mr. Pillay at a disadvantage if he doesn't have the documentation for him when I ask him something. And okay. So if we go to paragraph 5 of the affidavit, you will see that you detail that the Rule 53 record had been filed and that Minister Goodham had delivered a notice in terms of Rule 51 complaining that the public protector had failed to deliver a complete record and detail the documents that had not been provided, correct? Mr. Pillay? Are you with us?
Yes, I had to unmute, sir. Yes, indeed it is, sir.
Right, and then it goes on in paragraph 6. You then say that the public protector had delivered a supplementary record to the register, and the Minister Goodham had remained dissatisfied with the record that has been provided thus far, and you became aware of the existence of the supplementary record on 20 September 2019, where you obtained a copy thereof, and correct?
Correct.
And you then considered the record had been delivered, and in paragraph 9, you say you exercise your entitlement to supplement your affidavit, pointing out to three issues essentially. The first being that the public protector had failed to have any regard whatsoever to the detailed information that had been provided to office in 2014, material to investigation. Two, that they had failed to consider the evidence provided from Mr. van Lochenberg. That was material to evidence because that didn't form part of the supplementary record. And three, the gratuitous, what you cast as the gratuitous slur upon you by the public protector, where she maliciously, where you indicate that she maliciously concluded that you did not possess a matric certificate. Correct?
Correct.
Right. And then if I take you to page 1180, you return to the third issue, where you say that you had dealt with the public protector's false claim that you didn't even possess a matric certificate, and you obtained a transcript of the evidence that you had provided under oath to the public protector in the course of an investigation into the retirement matter. That's being the matter which was the subject that we had discussed earlier on, correct?
Correct.
Mr. Pillay?
Yes, that's correct.
And you annexed a full copy of that transcript to the affidavit, but in paragraph 17, you deal with the extract of the transcript. Could you just take us through that?
Yeah.
Can you maybe put into context, you were asked to come and meet with the the public protector and
Yes, I was there with my legal team, and this transcript says he will get yes because he was over 55. Okay, so plus the salary, plus allowance, call it that yes. I think before you come in, it was a follow-up on the requirements when you joined SARS in 1990 or when you promoted. And I mean, you're a member of the executive. What qualifications do you have? Then I speak. I was wondering when you would get there. I have matric. I passed matric in 1970. And it was inaudible, but it's Mirbank Indian High School. The response from the public protector is inaudible, but I say yes. And then
further on, if you go to the next page, the fourth line, the public protector repeats that.
Yeah. So you had matric in 1990. In fact, when you joined, and I said I had matric in 1970. Then the public protector says, I know, but when you joined, that was the highest qualification you had. I say, yes.
Right, and you point out that although the transcriber attributed the comments to Bernard Hotz, it was actually your advocate, Lawrence Hodes, that had made the comments, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, if I take you to one further aspect, and I want to take you to the issue of the Inspector General report.
Yes.
The court cries this in the judgment. I think it's paragraph 100 if we go back to the judgment. The judgment, me too. Paragraph 100. The complaint was, if you may recall, Mr. Pillay, was that you had not been afforded a, no, it's not 100, go to 117. I raised up 112. Right. The judgment record that the report relied on by the public protector is a report that originated from the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence that had been issued in October 2014. And the public protector then states in, and this is a reference to her report, that she was, quote, reliably informed that it was in the custody of the former Minister of State Security, from whom she tried to get a declassified copy of the report without success. She indicated that she had requested the President's assistance in making available the declassified report by the Minister of State Security, but to no avail. And then she goes down. The public protector relies on this report despite explicitly stating that she had not seen the report. She then relies on it because she has it on good authority that it was found in the report, and she then refers to two issues. The public protector in paragraph 14 then further recites the remedial action, namely that criminal charges be investigated against Minister Goddam, Mr. Pillay, and Mr. Lochenberg, and a certain Mr. Richter for the establishment and involvement in the intelligence unit in SARS. And paragraph 15 records that the public protector, according to the report, had never seen or verified the contents and findings of the OIG report. She ordered the Minister of State Security to implement within 90 days of the issuing of the report, acting in line with the Act, to implement it in its totality. If we then go further down, in paragraph 117, the court said that the public protector, however, applied a mind to the OIG report and not relied on good authority. She would have appreciated the shortcomings of the OIG report and in turn would not have issued the impugned remedial action. Had she applied a mind, she would have realized two important aspects. One, that the Inspector General acted ultra vires in investigating SARS officials and activities. And two, that Mr. Pillay and Mr. Goddam were not afforded a hearing as the RDL Compartment principle was not adhered to before coming to her findings.
Correct.
So you had not been afforded a hearing in respect of the OIG report or the findings in respect thereof. Would that be correct?
Yes, in two respects. Firstly, when the Inspector General was doing the so-called investigation, I was not interviewed for that investigation. She came to SARS, we had a meeting, and it was a meeting that discussed the way in which we would participate. But I was not called to the IG to make any submission. So I think that's the one issue. The second issue is that
the public protector went into these matters, but we didn't have the report. So it's in two respects that we didn't have audit. Thank you.
And was a copy of the report provided as part of the Rule 53 record being one of the documents to which was relied upon for purposes of the compilation of the report?
No, I don't think so.
So you further, I want to take you to another affidavit that you had dealt with this issue, which is part of the affidavits in relation to the Part A relief, which is at 1367 of the volumes 1 to 12 bundle in respect of case 48521. It starts... This was one of the affidavits that was filed in opposing in seeking the interim relief, correct?
Correct.
Right. And it starts at the top of the in fact, if we go to the heading, just go a little bit further up at the top of page 31, paragraph 31, so we can put it in context. The case for an urgent interdict. I have read and considered Minister Gordhan's submissions regarding the case for an urgent interdict. I'm in respectful agreement to what he says in this regard. And then it goes down. I wish to add the following. And you then deal with the remedy that has been sought in respect of the National Director of Public Prosecutions as being an intrusion on their powers. And then in paragraph 32.2, you deal with the demand made to the Commissioner for the South African Police Services to investigate matters. And then in paragraph 2.3, you deal with the demand made on the Minister of State Security to implement in totality the OIG report dated 31 October 2014, and you say it's astonishing, stating further that you wish to draw the court's attention to a series of letters that passed between the attorneys acting for you and Mr. Van Lochenberg and the Inspector General regarding the report that the public protector appears to have insight into, but rather coyly denies having possession of. Do you see that, Mr. Pillay?
Yes, I do.
If such a report does exist, her possession or use of it would clearly constitute criminal conduct on the part of Advocate Mkhubane, who as a former state security agency operative remains bound by national security and intelligence legislation. And you then annex several letters, which you summarize in the following paragraphs. We just move down. These letters is the correspondence which ensued between yourself and Mr. Van Lochenberg on the one end and the IGI office on the other, correct?
Correct.
Fine. And then you say there's been ongoing engagement between myself and others and the IGI, which brings into question A, the existence of the alleged report and investigation, B, the alleged content of any such report, and C, any ability to rely on such a report, since no one allegedly implicated had been afforded a hearing or any right of reply. None of these issues have been resolved or concluded yet.
Yes.
At that stage, were you not yet clear as to whether the report actually existed?
No, we were not clear.
Okay. The IGI then admits having no mandate over SARS, which invalidates any findings and recommendations that may have been made in the OIG report against SARS, me and other SARS officials. Mr. Pillay, we've already had evidence from Mr. Lockenberg that the report had been reviewed and set aside, but that wasn't the case at the time you had deposed to this affidavit, correct?
Correct.
And you find that the remedial action demanded by the public protector in this regard is irrational?
Yes.
Now, the public protector responds to this affidavit, and she responds to this affidavit just go to the top of the affidavit so that we can see. Up to the first page of the affidavit, just go up to paragraph one. I think you've gone to far. Paragraph one of that affidavit, go back. So we see that that's an affidavit, go down, made by the public protector, deposed within a personal knowledge on her understanding of the law and advice of her lawyers. Then she goes down, go down to three. I have addressed allegations made in the applicant's affidavit, which are largely repeated in the eighth respondent's affidavit. When I deal with part B, which relates to the prayer, I intend to deal with the allegations further. But then she goes down and she deals specifically with paragraph 32, which we had just dealt with. So go down to the response to paragraph 32.3. Go down. Yes. Okay, so it starts there. Are you going to fast? Wait. It starts by paragraph 32. Okay, stop there. That's fine. At paragraph 32.3 is the allegations relating to the, which we had just read out, including the phrase, she coyly denies being in possession of this report, and she says, similarly, my findings on the conduct of the applicant justifies a directive that the fifth respondent, Minister of Safety and Security, implements the OIG report. It is the Minister of State Security who may request from me the details that appear to trouble Minister and Pillay on whether I am in possession of the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence's report. Mr. Pillay has no lawful basis to ask me to confirm whether I am in lawful possession of documents in the control of the State Security Agency. And then she says the allegation that I'm a former state security operative deserves no answer other than that it does not form a legal basis on which interdict should be granted. You see, that was the exchange and the answer to your request for an indication as to whether Advocate Mkabane was in possession of a copy of the report, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, if we go further, and at some point in these proceedings, the Minister of Intelligence intervened. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do.
And I didn't forget it before. And deposed to affidavits in these proceedings. Do you recall that, Mr. Pillay?
Yes, I do.
She first filed an explanatory affidavit in this matter, and then she filed a replying affidavit, which sorry, can you just give us a minute? We is having an internet difficulty and can't download the document we put on the screen.
Yes, I don't get them both.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, sorry to disturb. I just wanted the page reference of this affidavit that was just in right now from Advocate Power. Thank you.
Of the one we're going to, or the one we...
Yeah, the one we're busy with now, but IGI.
Okay. I've just moved documents to download something. Can I just
do anytime. That
for a second? I'll do that for you now.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
The one I'm going to would be in volume 48 of the proceedings. In the SARS unit matter, and so I'm
okay, thanks.
So not to daring to download. Right. Essentially, what transpired was endeavors to show it to you. It's now kicked off my computer, so let me see if I can get it back.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, this is the last issue I'm going to be raising. So we're doing okay where time is concerned. And Mr. Bofu can then benefit from the... Oh, can you save it? Give it to us. That's what you do. How can you make a print?
Really? It's a bit of a long pause.
Let me sketch the background while we endeavor to see if we can sort this out. And I'll give Mr. Mpofu the references as we go along. The Minister of Intelligence intervenes in the proceedings to interdict the release, publication, and or public access of the report of the Inspector General, and does an explanatory affidavit asking for the references to the report to be struck out in this. And what I wanted to take you to was the two affidavits filed by the minister in these proceedings. And she says, I'm the Minister of State Security, and I'm not going to read it verbatim, but for Mr. Mpofu, it would be at the case lines reference at 001-5047, and on our records, it would be page 4235 of the bundle, volumes 38 to 48 in bundle E of the case records, number 7. Right, and what the minister on affidavit says is effectively that she submits this affidavit at the late stage of the proceedings, not to oppose the relief sought by the applicant in the intervention application, but simply to interdict the publication of the report and to strike out the references thereto in one of the founding affidavits of the intervening party. And then she says, she gives details of how the report was commissioned, that it was classified secret in accordance with the National Information Security Policy known as MIS, adopted by Cabinet, and that accordingly the information contained therein is classified in accordance with Chapter 2 of the MIS, since the information may be used by malicious / opposing / hostile elements to disrupt the collective and functions of an institute and or the state, and the restrictions applicable to classified information set out in the MIS therefore apply to the report. And she then, in her affidavit, sets out the relevant legislative framework and the provisions which apply, and the reasons why she seeks the order for the report not to lose its classification, and points out in paragraph 11 that paragraph 12, rather, that the public disclosure of classified information in the report would violate the rights of persons associated with the SSA, potentially disrupting the SSA's operations and impairing its intelligence gathering methods and threatening its operational cooperation with domestic institutions, particularly those mentioned in the report. She says this document does not lose its classification merely because it's been disclosed in the public domain. And in paragraph 14, she says both the first and second respondents and intervening parties are well aware of this provision of law, they have sought to request the declassification and or the declassified document. The public protector has given us 14 days to declassify the report and avail it to our office. The intervening party has requested the declassified report. The request dated 18th July 2019, attached as AD1. And if one goes to AD1, then it's a letter from a response to Worksman's attorneys. Was Worksman's attorneys at that stage acting for you and Mr. Lochenberg, or just Mr. Lochenberg, Mr. Pillay?
For both of us.
Right. She then further in her explanatory affidavit states the report has not been declassified. The intervening party has not advanced any public or private good that will be served by public disclosure as against the personal danger to which the SSA operative concerns the activities will be placed. And that affidavit was dated 22 July 2019. The eighth respondent, which is yourself, then In the course of those proceedings, the minister then files a replying affidavit to the answer affidavit filed by the public protector and advocate in Kobani, which was dated 20th July 2020. And says the following in that affidavit, and for reference purposes, Mr. Paulful, it's located at 001-507-18 case lines and is page 4266 of the same bundle to which I have referred earlier. And it says therein, and I'm not going to read everything, but effectively she responds to Advocate Mkubani's affidavit and says the first and second respondent in paragraph 3 must concede the basis on which I support the relief sought by the applicant insofar as he seeks to review and set aside the first respondent's remedial action imposed on me. Further, the first and second respondent must construe the nature of the interlocutory application heard before Kabisa 2CJ and the reasons why I conceded to the order in the Van Lochenberg review application. Mr. Pillay, the minister didn't oppose the application brought by Mr. Van Lochenberg to have the report reviewed and set aside, correct?
Correct.
Right.
I didn't hear that.
That's correct.
Thank you.
The minister then says it also bears mention that the second respondent is repetitive in answering affidavit in an attempt to reinforce the above-mentioned misplaced position, and I have been left no choice but to reiterate our position, which is that the first respondent's remedial action is incompetent in law and incapable of being implemented. The latter position remains accurate, notwithstanding the subsequent consent order in the Van Lochenberg review application. And then she turns to deal with specific allegations she denies that the and the first and second respondent is the public protector and advocate in Kobani in these papers. Is that not so, Mr. Pillay? Yes. And she then says safe to deny that all the first and second respondents submissions of a legal nature are entirely correct. I take note of the allegations contained. And then I'm going to take you to paragraph 6 in our affidavit, and I apologize, Mr. Pillay. Have you got the hard drive? Okay. She initially responds to an averment that she had struck a deal with Mr. Van Lochenberg to set aside the report, and says that what is perplexing about the assertion is that the first and second respondent consciously disregarded the role of the Inspector General of Intelligence, who incidentally is the author of the IGI report. She then explains how the engagement came about with the IGI for purposes of, finally. All right, so let's go down to paragraph 6.2. That the attorneys of record, IGI and the attorneys of record for Mr. Van Lochenberg had independently started engaging on the possibility of a consent order, and at that moment she was still engaged with the legal representatives on the lawfulness of the status of the report. And she goes down and she says the IGI had expressed the view that they would not oppose the relief due to the inherent flawed processes in the 2014 investigation. And then goes further, says she applied a minor after receiving counsel's advice and she agreed to the consent order. There was no relief sought against her in the review application. And then she goes further down. And she points out that she had supported the relief by the applicants insofar as they sought to review and set aside the first respondent's remedial action imposed on me. It was not filed solely to proffer an explanation pertaining to the manner in which the consent order reviewing and setting aside the IGI was obtained. Then in paragraph 7.2 says, second, the facts pertaining to the defunct IGI report, as well as its subsequent review by Mr. Van Lochenberg, had to be disclosed to the above honorable court. Third, the settlement and the consent order was not initiated or instigated by me. She then says, in paragraph 9, I'm going to skip that. The allegations in paragraph 9.2 to the effect that my conduct in consenting to the review and setting aside of the IGI report is inexplicable because the IGI report is the subject of a pending judgment before Madam Justice is misplaced. The interlocutory application is only concerned with an interdictory relief aimed at, amongst others, interdicting publication of the state security agents, and she didn't entertain the merits of the IGI report. And then she goes on and she says, it was on this basis that I made available the redacted report to all the parties who were present, inclusive of the first and second respondents, during the proceedings of the interlocutory application. And goes on in 9.5 saying, it was never my intention to defend the IGI report, but rather to protect the identity of the state security agents whose names were contained in the unredacted report. Hence, the redacted, declassified IGI report was ultimately made available. I suppose to point out that this, in fact, was what the first respondent had requested of me. And so, Mr. Pillay, during these proceedings, the parties received a redacted, declassified IGI report, correct?
Correct.
Right. Now, this matter has since been taken on appeal, and we've already dealt with the fact that it's pending before the Constitutional Court, correct?
Correct.
And in the proceedings before the Constitutional Court, does the public protector persist in seeking to have the findings in total in relation to the review and setting aside of her report be considered by the Constitutional Court? I'm sorry, Mr. Pereira, that came out extremely clumsily. Let me rephrase that. Leave is being sought by the public protector from the Constitutional Court, correct?
Correct.
And that is against the whole of the judgment and order that is handed down by the High Court, and in respect of which leave was refused by the Supreme Court, and in which the reconsideration was refused by the President of the Supreme Court, correct?
That's correct.
Right. And in that, in seeking to have that relief set aside, the there is no qualification in the relief sought of any abandonment in respect of the remedies relating to the IGI report, correct?
Correct, but my understanding is it's a request of the Constitutional Court for leave to appeal. So
that's correct. But leave to appeal against all the findings.
Yes, yes indeed.
To do that.
Yes.
And although there's an acknowledgement before the Constitutional Court in an affidavit that the OIG report had been set aside before a court of law, there's no acknowledgement that the remedy sought in respect of the OIG report is also now defunct as such. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Mr. Pillay, is there anything else that you would like to say to the committee?
Just one or two small points on the IGI report. The IG's investigation began or was prompted by an article in the City Press on the 10th of August 2014. I'm just going to read the first paragraph. It says a City Press investigation has revealed the existence of the Special Operations Unit of the SSA, where rogue agents use state resources to conduct dirty trick campaigns, smuggle cigarettes, and disgrace top civil servants. That it is following such an article on the 10th of August that the then Minister of Intelligence asked for that investigation. And the terms of reference was around what was in the City Press article. But in the end, the investigation focused on SARS.
Your point
okay, thank you. Just pause. I see a hand, Advocate Mbof.
Yes, sir. Now I wanted to check if this document that's being read now is part of the documents, Advocate Bao.
I'm not sure with Mr. Pillay, what are you? Are you reading a document?
To you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading from a press cutting
which is not part of my affidavit, but it's City Press, and I've given you the date. It's 10th of August, 2014.
Chair?
Yes?
Yeah, no, it's not a problem. Mr. Pillay, if you can send it to Ms. Bauer, and I'm sure it will be made to form part of the record. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In fact, if you see at the system call for at page 3469 of the same bundle we were at, it would say the Minister of State Security requested the Inspector General to conduct an investigation into media allegations. I didn't understand that to be in dispute, Mr. Mpofu.
No, it's not in dispute. I just want to read what is being read by the witness. It's not about dispute.
Yes.
And I'm sure the members, the honourable members, would also like to have.
Yeah, no, thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Can that be said?
Thank you.
I'm
sure we'll be able to find it on the internet.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Pillay, you were interrupted.
Yeah, I think that's the, through your chair, that's the one point that I wanted to make.
Thank you. And we're bound.
I have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Advocate Bauer. And now proceed. You would have saved 8 minutes of your time. I proceed to and add those remaining minutes to Advocate Mpofu. Advocate Mpofu, I recognize you for cross-examination.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you for the 8 minutes. good morning, Mr. Pillay. You're muted, Mr. Pillay.
Good morning.
Thank you. You can call me comrade.
I will.
Thank you. Let's just start with this IGI story, since you ended with it, just to so that we don't have to come back to it. You have traced it to the 10th of August 2014, City Press, then the minister investigated. And is it correct that shortly thereafter, you appointed the Sikakane report, rather panel?
Correct.
Pardon?
Correct, that is correct. Through your chair.
Yes, and that would be when? Around about September of the same year?
Yes, I'll get the exact date to you, but it's September of the same year.
Yeah, 2014. Okay. And that was to investigate the conduct of Mr. Van Lochemberg.
Yes, it is so.
And that panel was made up of three advocates, Advocate Sikakane leading the team, Advocate Nasrin Batlenda Rajab, and Advocate Patrick Romano, correct?
Correct.
And in a nutshell, they found that the activities of the rogue units were unlawful. The so-called rogue units, were unlawful.
Yes, that is what they found.
Yeah. And the IGI report, which you referred to earlier, had also found, actually, it was stronger than the Kakane report. It found that the activities of the so-called rogue unit were criminal.
I believe that's so.
Yes. And in fact, that it recommended that you, Mr. Van Lochenberg and Mr. Godin, be charged criminally.
I believe it said so.
Well, and you were indeed charged criminally when?
I can't remember.
Okay, neither can I. I think it was 2016, 2017, around about then.
Okay.
Yes, okay, fine, we'll find it. I was just looking at it now. Sorry. Sorry, just 1 second. Yeah. You, who were the accused? It was you and Mr. Van Lochenberg, and who?
Heinrich Van Rensburg.
And Mr. Van Rensburg.
Yes.
And what were the charges?
I can't remember the specific charges, but it is to that allegedly we set up an unlawful unit and we carried out unlawful activities.
Yes. Okay, no, that's fine. And then, okay, we'll come back to that. But just for the sake of completion, so that means then the NPA also found that there was at least a prima facie case of criminality.
I can't see...
I just switched off the video for a short while because I just didn't want to disturb you. I'm fiddling with paper there.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes, this was the, I think during the time that the NPA was led by Mr. Sean, or Advocate Sean Abrahams.
Abrahams, yes.
They believed that there was a case.
Yes. Okay, so that was the, let's call it the third agency that believed that you had done something wrong to various degrees. Kakane just said it's unlawful, the activities of the so-called rogue unit. The IGI said it required criminal investigation, and the NPA found sufficient prima facie evidence of criminality. Right. And then in addition to that, is it also correct that KPMG also found the units to be unlawful?
Let me first say that all of the things you are talking about have been disputed and in fact are really of no value. The KPMG withdrew its conclusions. KPMG claimed that he did a documentary analysis only. And KPMG said that it can, to the extent that there's anything in the report that pertains to discussions about the law, or et cetera, or interpretation of the law, they are not qualified to do that. And KPMG withdrew its conclusion. And I think one of the judgments that we're dealing with actually says KPMG is wrong in fact and in law.
Yeah, no, we'll get there, Mr. Pillay. I'm just remember that all this, and then the IGI report was reviewed and set aside and all that. And I'm just talking about at the time, but just work with me here. So we will get to what then became of those findings. But I'm simply saying to you that the fourth independent agency at the time that found the unit to be unlawful was KPMG, correct?
Well, I would question the word independent.
Okay, let's say external.
Can I make the point that I would say that all of these institution or bodies were connected to each other in some way.
Okay, including the one. I'm sorry, Mr. Blair.
In advancing the same narrative.
Yes, including the one that you appointed.
Indeed.
So why did you appoint people? Sorry, carry on.
I appointed Advocate Skakane to investigate allegations around Johan van Lochelenburg.
Yeah.
And that was the terms of reference. And if I understand it now, it was a fact-finding request. But what actually happened is that Advocate Skakane decided to change the terms of reference on his own. And it actually coincides with the Sunday Times barrage of reports. And it coincides with the appointment of the new commissioner of SARS. And my understanding is that the Skakane report is an opinion, and I responded in a critique of that document, a 32-page critique, which the then commissioner of SARS refused to read. The critique is there, and I made it available to the public protector also. So we were told by legal counsel that there's no point in trying to set aside that report because it's just an opinion.
Yeah, no, that's, I understand that. You do accept also that the judgments that you've been reading are also opinions?
No, I don't accept that. Look, I'm not a lawyer. And actually, I'm not a qualified person in, so I can't argue the from legal point of these things. But for me, my understanding, the judgment stands, and it's final. And if there are issues with the any of the judgments, they must be dealt with within the judiciary process. And that is my view. It cannot be a mere opinion. That does not mean that a judgment cannot be contextualized, etc. For sure, all of that can be done. But I regard it as binding between myself and the public protector.
I see. So you regard it as binding, even if it is still going to be finalized by the Constitutional Court?
My understanding, and as I understand the interaction between you and one of the other persons like myself who provided evidence, is that the judgment stands until the judgment is set aside. And my understanding here is that there's an application for leave to appeal. If the leave is granted, then an appeal would be made. And then there might be a judgment. That's two or four. And until then, the present judgment stands.
Okay. All right. No, okay. No, fine. You are wrong about that. The application for leave to appeal is what suspends the judgment. But as I say, we don't want to get into legalities. Your opinion is that the judgment, irrespective of the fact that it might be reversed, it's final or whatever. Am I capturing your understanding correctly?
What I'm saying is that the first matter is final, the way I understand it, which is the matter around the pension issue and my re-employment.
Uh-huh.
The second matter, there is a judgment, and leave to appeal was refused, and the matter all up the chain, and the matter is now before Constitutional Court for leave to appeal.
Right.
So what we do have now is a binding judgment. Until that is set aside, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. No. All right. Fine. I won't bore you with the legalities. Let me just say that's a wrong understanding of the situation. All right. And you're saying you don't know that a judgment, even if it has been, even the one that where there's been a final judgment of the Constitutional Court, that it constitutes an opinion?
No. Well, for me, as I say, I'm not a lawyer. I've always regarded that there are three arms, three spheres of government, and independent spheres of government, and that these matters were decided in court, and that's where they stand.
Okay.
That's my view. It may not be the right view, the correct view, but I don't pretend to be a lawyer on the matter.
No, fine. No, I promise you that's not what I'm doing. I'm just surprised because this is in a judgment that is about you, this whole thing, the one that you've been reading copiously here. Can we go to that, the judgment of Godan Mahashula Pillay and Office of the Public Protector? That's the 36099. If the is the one that Mr. Pillay was reading out.
Okay, you got that, Sepo? We're looking for it, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, Chair.
We'll flight it immediately.
Yes, and when we find it, please go to roundabout paragraph 95.
95.
Yes. And anyway, while we are waiting, Mr. Pillay, do you remember that both you and Mr. Godan were trying to do what some of the members want this committee to do, which is to rely directly on court judgment in order to get personal costs against the public protector? Remember that?
Yes.
And the court rejected your attempts to get personal costs against the public protector, correct?
On that occasion?
Yes, we're talking about that occasion, yeah. Yes, and one of the grounds was what you and I are debating now, correct? Oh, you might not remember, okay, then maybe you just read the part that you were asked to read. But if you read the whole judgment, can you go to paragraph 95? Rather, I'm sorry, start at paragraph 91.
Okay, we'll go there.
90
Okay, you keep changing. Okay, we'll go with you as you change.
Yeah, don't tempt me, sir. There's another.
We are there now.
We go to 80 now. No, I'm joking. All right, now let's leave it here at 90. Okay, I'll read it out just to make it fast, if you don't mind, Mr. Pillay.
For you, Chair.
Fine. Yeah. Now, okay, firstly, before I do that, you remember that you had fully associated yourself with the allegations made by Minister Godan in the relevant portions, including asking for personal costs, correct?
Correct.
And for that, the court punished you with a punitive cost on the attorney and client scale, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Also, because you had made gratuitous insults against the public protector, correct? Correct?
I think you must point that out to me. Where
okay. I'll do that. Okay, let's start with this one. In paragraph 53 to 55 of the founding affidavit, Minister Godan, which you associated yourself with, directly quotes portions of judgment where adverse findings were made in respect of the public protector. I do not intend to quote them here, as they are succinctly set out in Minister Godan's founding affidavit. It is alleged that those paragraphs specifically reference instances of repeated admonishments that the public protector received from the court to comply with the Constitution and the Public Protector Act, and where she was marked with personal costs as a result of her failure. Paragraph 91, relying on National Director of Public Prosecution, that's a case in the Supreme Court of Appeal, the public protector in her heads of argument submits that the allegations relating to other court cases ought to be struck out as irrelevant, as they constitute the opinions of other courts, and the decision of which some are still pending. The thing that you and I have just debated. So the applicants, on the other hand, submit that the judgments are directly relevant, as some in this committee do, to this review, and also have a bearing on the order of personal costs and so on and so on. And then if you can go to 95, just jump to 95. Yeah. And then it says, the court in Institute for Accountability in Southern Africa, that's another case we presented to the court, of the Gauteng court. When determining whether the Hollington rule applied in relation to the applicability of findings of previous courts to subsequent civil proceedings, held as follows. Ultimately, the rationale for the Hollington rule is that the findings of previous court constitutes the opinion of that court, and for that reason, irrelevant and inadmissible in subsequent civil proceedings. Even though such findings constitute expressions of opinion, they cannot be equated with the opinions of ordinary individuals and cannot be treated as such. Those findings were made by judges and confirmed in certain circumstances by justices or by a court. Judges have a duty to form and express opinions concerning issues raised before them, and so on. The opinions are also binding on all persons on whose organs or state rules they apply. For all these reasons, the impugned paragraphs must be struck out as irrelevant. In other words, your attempt to get the court to rely on previous judgment was... Sorry, can you see me? Because I can't see myself.
No, can't see you.
Okay, let me try. Okay, there you are. Sorry, Mr. Pillay. I was saying, do you accept that your attempt to use previous judgments to rely on in order to criticize the public protector were rejected by the court on the basis that those were opinions of those courts. Correct?
My understanding is that the court's view was that it was not relevant to what was before the court.
Yes, but it was not relevant because it was opinion of the court. I've just read it out to you, correct?
To you, Chair, I don't want to get into a legal argument because, I'm not a legal person. I thought the issue was not that it's just an opinion, but it's relevance.
Yes, that's the... Believe me, Mr. Pillay, I'm trying to simplify it as much as possible. I don't expect you to know the law, but at least just to have an ear to listen to what I'm saying. I read out to you that the public protector submit the allegations relating to other courts ought to be struck out as irrelevant as they constitute the opinions of other courts. So that it's exactly the same point. They're not just irrelevant in the air. She was saying they're irrelevant as they constitute the opinions of the court, the decisions of which some are still pending. And the court agreed with them. So for all these reasons, the impugned paragraphs must be struck out as irrelevant for those reasons. You don't need to be a lawyer to understand. That's just, I'm reading it out for you.
Yeah, it says the impugned paragraphs must be struck out as irrelevant.
Yes, but the basis upon which they were said they were to be relevant was because there were opinions of other courts, including the Hollington rule. I don't want to get into detail, the one that I just read out to you. Well, the rule in Hollington, let me just for the assistance of anyone else who's listening. The rule in Hollington is an English rule that says the judgment of another court is an opinion of that court, and therefore generally should not be held as relevant. That's just an aside. And all I'm asking you, in your case, of the judgment that you seem to know very well, is that that was the ground that the public protector relied on, and that's the ground upon which you were that the court found against you and even marked you with attending client costs. Correct?
It's correct that the court found that the paragraphs that we depended on were not relevant. The judgments were not relevant, and as I said, I've regarded the judgments as binding between myself and the public protector. What the parliamentary committee does with that is up to the parliamentary committee.
Okay, that's fine. I can live with that. You don't seem to want to... I won't read it for the third time. But it's fine.
May I also point out, it says here, that these opinions are also binding on all persons and those organs of state to which they apply.
Yes, that's the Gauteng case, yes. You can point that out, yeah. But at least from what you've just now read, you accept that they are called opinions, okay? Those opinions. Correct?
My understanding is that is within the parameters of a court.
Mr. Pillay, please.
Yes.
Are they referred to as those opinions? The thing that you just read, does it start with the word those opinions?
Let me put it this way, Advocate. Yeah. Is that how can opinions be binding?
Don't ask me. You're the one who just read it out.
No, what I'm saying is I've never used the word opinion in referring to court judgments.
But yes. I say, I don't know enough. It ultimately is up to the evidence leader, yourself, and the committee to discuss these things and see are the judgments relevant.
Yes, no, that is true. But that was true about all the other paragraphs you were reading ad nauseam. I'm saying the clear reading of what you have quoted says that those are our opinions of judges.
Opinions that are binding on all persons and those organs of state to which they apply.
Yes.
That is the full sentence.
Yes, but I read it out for you, but you are just refusing to accept the first two words of the thing that you read yourself. But now that's fine. The point I'm simply making is that it is a rule of the law which you should know, not because you are a lawyer, but because it is an attachment in respect of which you were punished with cost, that what you and Mr. Godin were trying to do is not allowed, which is to rely on judgments of courts, which are opinions, as if they were fact. That's just what happened to you. You know, it's not about legal principles. It happened to you. You had to pay punitive cost for that, for making that mistake. Now it looks like you want to make it again. But the whole point of punitive cost is to teach you a lesson. Understand? Do you understand that?
But I understand that, and I really think your client doesn't understand.
You think my client doesn't understand it?
No.
Okay. But okay. That's the same client who raised this issue successfully against you, and you were marked with attorney and client cost. Which of the two persons do you think doesn't understand that rule between you and her? The one who won or the one who lost that point?
Chair, I want to clarify the issues here. The public protector has also had costs awarded against her. We have had costs awarded against us. And I believe we have learned from what happened to us. That's the point I'm trying to.
Okay. Yeah, no, but on this specific point, the one that was being taught a lesson was you, by her, because she raised the issue and you lost the issue. But that's fine. I just wanted to point out to you, and for the benefit of, it looks like the lesson you didn't learn there. But that's what it is, Mr. Pillay. Judgments of other courts are opinions of that court. And judgments that are pending, you are also wrong there, are suspended by the mere institution of an application for leave to appeal. So we are wrong on both counts, but that's fine. Let's move to something else. You also accept that we said IGI, KPMG, NPA, Skakane. Right. Number five, that the Kruon panel also found that it was illegal, the rogue unit was illegal, correct?
They did not find that. They had endorsed the Skakane panel report, and they later said that they were wrong.
That they were sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the judge went on to say, Judge Kroon, that the statement was not thought through properly and was in fact incorrect.
Yeah, you've said all that. But at the time, that was the fifth Let's do it bit by bit, Mr. Pillay. At that time, that was the fifth external body that found that the rogue unit was illegal, correct? Or at least that endorsed the view that it was illegal in this case, correct?
Yes, they did endorse the view.
Yes. And then there was also the opinion of Advocate Brassi SC that pointed in the same direction, so that I just don't have it with me. Were you aware of the Brassi opinion?
Much later.
Later, yes. Okay, so that's number six. Then there was an advocate, I almost said Advocate Manike, but that's somebody else. There was another advocate who found the same thing, correct? Another panel.
I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of the Trengrove, Advocate Trengrove or Counsel Trengrove had given an opinion to SARS.
Yes. Okay. He is an advocate. I think there was one more person, number eight, but well, I think that's enough. I mean, the point I think is made. Yeah. So as you testified, you said the public protector came at the tail end of this series of negative findings against the rogue unit, correct?
Through your chair, correct.
Thank you. And she was aware at the time that, or rather, she was not aware, for example, that the IGI report would be set aside. So she was working on it at face value, correct?
Through your chair, I think that's one of the issues, is that all the assertions that have favored a particular narrative were accepted without question. Without question, was accepted, as you say, at face value.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is, in my view, that is a problem.
Yes. Yeah. Now, okay, if you were the public protector or somebody else and you are faced with seven or eight findings by different institutions which are completely unrelated, would you accept that at the very least you should think that there's something there?
Chair, I must point out that that narrative was challenged, and there were some reverses. The Sunday Times had withdrawn.
I didn't even count the Sunday Times. Yes, thanks for reminding me. That would be number nine. Yeah,
and that's an important one because. Yeah. Skakane seemed to give some relevance to the Sunday Times reports.
Number 10 would be the City Press then, if we use that series.
Well, my understanding, the City Press report talks about a rogue unit in the SSA.
Just pause there, Mr. Pillay and Advocate Mbofu. I recognize Advocate Bauer.
I just want a clarification. A clarification from Mr. Mpofu, whether it's the public protector's version based on multiplicity of reports or media reports of any kind, she's entitled to accept it at face value.
No,
did you get that, Advocate Mpofu?
No, I got it, but it's just disturbing me for no reason. I'm not under cross-examination here. Mr. Pillay?
I'm wanting to, yes, to ascertain as to what...
No, you can ascertain. You can ascertain. We have many, many months for you to ascertain whatever you want to ascertain. Can I finish?
Advocate Mpofu? Yes. Yeah, no, may I request, because when she was leading evidence, I allowed the opportunity to get clarities and even place certain things on record. I think that consistency is important. She is asking a definite question. I think it's proper that you respond to that.
I'm never going to do that. I'm not going to answer her question. I've given the clarification that I'm busy with cross-examination. If she wants to understand anything, she'll understand it when we give a statement.
Let's
Mr. Pillay?
If no, before you go to Mr. Pillay, not only her, if there are going to be members here who are going to ask a question and clarifications, I expect that there be a response to that. Form of an answer, if you're not able to answer, you'll indicate that, but I can never accept you saying you're never going to answer that. I don't think it helps.
Well, Jefferson, yes, you know very well I've been responding. If there's a reasonable question, I respond to it. But I'm not going to, in the middle of my cross-examination, be answering questions about versions and whatnot from anybody. So, but if it's a question that is a clarification, third question, as you are saying, then of course we deal with them in the usual way. But I'm not going to right now, be telling you what the version of the public protector is or is not on a particular point. I mean, you just allow me to be abused.
No, I'm not.
Let me assist
because when you I allowed you during the leading of evidence.
Yeah, that was different.
I'm speaking, Advocate Mpofu.
You see now.
I'm speaking.
But I can't allow my cross examination to be.
Advocate Mpofu, please switch off your mic, Honorable Milam. Advocate Mpofu, I am addressing you, and I don't expect you to be throwing hands in the inquiry. Please, I want you to really pull back on what you're doing. All I'm indicating here, that's how this inquiry has been running. It's going to continue doing that. I will never not allow the evidence leader, yourself, or any member here not to have an opportunity to intervene on a particular issue that they want clarity on or want to ask a question. So I'm not going to change that. So I'm asking you, because if your point you're making, because you'd better if you say maybe you're not ready to respond to this issue at this point, but you will respond with that something else in terms of what evidence the public procedure will place. But it's not helpful to just say you're never going to do this. It doesn't have this process.
I said exactly what you are. If you play the recording, I've said what you are advising me to do. So thank you for your advice, but I don't need it because I've just done exactly that.
Okay, let's proceed. But I'm going to be watching that. I need responses when clarities are sought.
As you know, for the past 3 weeks, I give responses when proper clarities are sought. But I'm not going to be forced to answer.
Just pause before you proceed, Honorable Nodada.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just want to come in here as a concern, Chair. Chair, we're running a process here. There are directives. We've requested that we all respect one another when we do speak. I think the language used by Advocate Mpofu is completely out of line.
Please.
And there can't be statements that are made that I will never do this and whatever the case may be. There are directives that guide us here. Let's please calm down, respond to each other respectfully. What has been requested is not the first time it's been requested. It's been done previously, and it's been responded to by Advocate Mpofu and the legal team of the public protector on whether that's the version of the public protector or not. So I don't see why we should be up in arms. Let's please just calm down, respect this process, because it does apply to all of us, and there are directives that guide us to do that, and not throw statements that can, you know, derail this process and make it be something that it's not. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Nodada. As you, I allow you to proceed, Advocate Mbofu. This on this issue is a simple response of yes or no, and you proceed.
No, I'm never going to do that.
Hello?
I'm not going to respond to a question about the versions when I'm busy with cross-examination. I will put my version when I put it. If you want to kick me out, you can kick me out. I'm never going to do that. Let me say it slowly. I am not going to do it.
Now, Advocate Mbofu, you've been doing it.
Well,
we've been doing
questions differ, but I've been doing it for 3 weeks.
When
the question is reasonable, when it's reasonable,
I want you to calm down. It's an important process that we're dealing with here, and I do need that indication from you as a chair, because there's no point in us just proceeding when we're not able to hear each other, because then it defies the importance of this hearing. If you are saying you would want to come back to that issue and give a response, I will allow you to do that, but I'm not going to accept an answer that says you're never going to do it.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's too broad. I'm never going to do it right now. I agree with you. I will do it when it's suitable to do it. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay, I will keep that. I will remind you. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Right, Mr. Pillay. Sorry, before that interruption, I was saying that my question was, and I was trying to put it at the lowest level, that if you were in the shoes of the public protector and you were faced with all these 8 or 9, whatever number, views that the rogue unit, the so-called rogue unit, was illegal, could you be possibly forgiven for thinking there must be something in this? And I was putting it at that kind of level deliberately, not saying you say, well, it must be definitely beyond doubt, whatever, but just to think, for a reasonable person in her shoes, to think there must be something in this thing if all these 8 or so organizations that are different have found it all to be illegal. Would you at least accept that, just at that level?
Chair, as I say, I'm not a lawyer. I know something about investigations.
Mm-hmm.
What I know, what we've always done, and I cannot speak for the public protector, what we've always done is,
mm-hmm.
is before proceeding to an investigation, first inquire into the allegations. Understand the allegations, who's making the allegations, what is it about? Is it vague? Is it specific? The mm-hmm. who, what, where, whence, and to the extent that when we're looking at reports that are done, were people given the opportunity, were people heard, were all of those things done properly? So that is not it's not an investigation itself. That is to mm-hmm. verify the allegation that this is a serious allegation that needs to be dealt with. That is what I would do.
Yes. No, I accept that, Mr. Pillay. I really do. All I'm saying to you, remember here, we're not really about scrutinizing the ins and outs or the wherewithal of these 8 or 9 institutions. I'm asking you a very simple question. We're just here, gathered here, to assess the conduct of the public protector. You understand that? You volunteered as a member of the public to assist in that process. Are we together?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, so that's really our only business here. Now, I'm saying now, put yourself in her shoes so that the honorable members, when they have to assess her conduct or otherwise, must be able to do the same thing. I'm saying put yourself in her shoes, and here you are doing an investigation with all the qualifications that you've correctly put. But, you know, we're all human. You know that there are 8 or 9 different agencies of varying degrees that have found that this thing is illegal. All I'm saying is that at a human level, are you entitled to say there must be something in this? If this one, and the KPMG and Kakane appointed by Mr. Pillay and the NPA and so on, all of them, without sitting in one meeting, find that this thing is illegal, there must be something in it. If you're not prepared to concede that much, you're not. But that's what I'm putting to you.
So Chair, let me answer this firstly by way of an analogy, and then later I would give you my view.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working in intelligence, there were a number of reports from police crime intelligence, from national, from different divisions in national intelligence, right, to say there's a conspiracy to overthrow the ANC government.
Mm-hmm.
The people who were involved in this is Big Botha, blah, blah, blah. It named a lot of people. And there were all of these reports
coming in.
And Minister Ntantla at that stage said, look, this is very serious. Mm-hmm. All of these things are saying similar things.
Mm-hmm.
So at that stage, a committee was set up, a commission, but it's an internal commission.
Mm-hmm.
And it was chaired by Advocate Busi Pikole.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate to be chosen as a member of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into that, into all of those things, by doing the first level checking. Who said this? Who's this? Who's the source of the information? How was this obtained, et cetera, et cetera. The people who are making statements, where they cautioned, all of those things. We did all of those things.
Yeah.
We found at the end of it that all of it arose from one policeman in the Free State. He was the source of all of this information.
Mm.
And he had the Minister Chancellor and many, many other people running around for months on end on this. And I remember that when we presented the final report, it started with saying, one day in Bethlehem, because it was really Bethlehem, playing on the biblical references.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that the political principles were not happy with that answer. They really believed that there is a conspiracy.
Yeah. No, fair enough. That's exactly, no, I get your point, Mr. Pillay, sorry to cut you. That's exactly what I'm asking you. That those political principles that you are dealing with, the whole thing could have been just nonsense. But I'm saying those political principles could be forgiven for taking it seriously simply because of the number of voices that seemingly were unrelated, saying the same thing. Is that, so you and I are making the same point?
No.
So you're saying that they were crazy?
No, through the chair, I think it is easy for political principles
to fall into that trap. Public servants, people in public administration should not be falling into those traps. In fact, we are the ones who should be helping the politicians.
I see. So they are not human beings, these public servants. So they don't, if you are a public servant and 8 or 9 people in the building say there's a fire, because you are a public, you are not a politician, you must dismiss them. What is that?
Through you, Chair, that is not what I'm saying. The point we have made repeatedly is that the public protector has chosen uncritically to accept allegations about us, and she has chosen to discard almost anything that we have said. That's the point we are making.
No. All right. I'll move on. I don't think you understand what I'm saying. I'm talking about before that, before she makes any finding, before all that. I'm just saying when she gets a complaint, and part of the material before her is that there are 8 or 9 agencies from Limpopo and wherever and the Eastern Cape and who uncoordinated in some one gathering have found the same thing. Is she at a human level entitled or not to think there must be something in this? Because we're not starting from scratch. There are other people who have found this way. I mean, it's such a simple notion, but if you're not prepared to concede that, then that's fine. Let's move on to something else.
So, Mr. Chair, I just also want to point out there's a timeline, and I can't remember the timeline, but some of these things began to fall before and during the process that the public protector was working on these things. And she refused to pay any attention to
them. They fell. What do you mean by that?
Well, they were withdrawn. I mean, some of these reports were withdrawn. And the public protector took no account of that.
Was Mr. Kakana report ever withdrawn?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that one could not go to court to set it aside. My understanding is that under the new commissioner in SARS, they have said they place no reliance on it.
No, Mr. Pillay, please. We'll never finish if you don't listen to the question. Was the Sikakane report ever withdrawn, yes or no?
My understanding is that it's an opinion.
Yes, and whatever.
And SARS says that it sets no store by that opinion.
Mr. Pillay, I'm asking you for the last time. Let's assume it's an opinion or a work of fiction. I'm saying to you, was the Skakane report ever withdrawn, yes or no? To your knowledge.
My understanding is that it's not necessary to withdraw it. It is an opinion.
I take it that you are refusing to answer that simple question. I've asked it 3 times and I'm not going to ask it again. And the reason I'm singling out the Sikakane opinion, rather panel report, is because it was appointed by you, Mr. Pillay. So surely it can't fall into this category of the Bethlehem situation.
Mr. Chairman, I must point out that there was a terms of reference given to Advocate Sikakane. And he changed the terms of reference to fix his focus on a unit in SARS.
Yes.
That was his choice.
Yes. And having exercised that choice, which is wrong and what have you, was his report ever withdrawn?
My understanding is that it is not necessary to withdraw it. And my understanding is that the judgments have pronounced that it's actually wrong in law and in fact in many instances.
And those judgments might be reversed on appeal.
That is possible.
Yes, thank you. No, that's fine. All right, now we'll add it at the end. Now, you also testified about the IGI report specifically. And you were taken to paragraph 113, I think. If we can just quickly go there. Start at 112. Just want to show you that some of the dangers of relying blindly on court judgment or the opinions of courts. Are we there? Do you have the hard copy version, Mr. Play?
No, I don't.
Okay, so let's wait. Okay, thanks. Okay, anyway, while just so that to save time, the passage that you are taken to, some of the passages, you remember that the public protector was found to have been biased and all sorts of things like that on the basis that she had claimed that she had not seen the IGI report in the report. In her report, I'm sure you've heard.
Yes.
Did you watch the evidence of Mr. Van Loffenberg?
To your chair, yes, I did.
Yes. Okay. So that's good. So you know some of what's coming. So I'm saying the one of the issues which Mr. Van Loffenberg and I debated was this issue. Do you also associate yourself with his evidence that the public protector had emphatically stated in the report that she had not seen the IGI report?
Chair, my understanding is that it's the judgment says that uses the word emphatically denied.
No, it's not. The judgment used the word explicitly. Mr. Van Loffenberg used the word emphatically, which basically means the same thing.
I think I use the word coyly denied.
Yeah, so you don't agree with Mr. Van Loffenberg that it was emphatically put in the report that she had not seen it?
At this stage, I can't remember too well, but I had a different view at that time and I expressed it.
A different view to Mr. Van Loffenberg?
The different view is expressed in the affidavit. It's a Corey denial.
No, please listen to the question. Do you agree or disagree with Mr. Van Loffenberg when he says the public protector in her report emphatically stated that she had not seen the IGI report?
I have a different view.
Yeah, that's the same thing as disagreeing. What's your problem? You can say you disagree with Mr. Van Loffenberg. It's fine. He's not going to do anything to you.
Advocate Mpofu, he has a different view.
Yes, sir. I'm entitled to ask him to answer my question squarely. I've asked him a simple question. Does he agree or disagree? I mean, you know, I'm not a linguist. I don't have to go to some dictionary to work out his answers. Okay, Mr. Pillay, from that I would assume therefore you disagree with Mr. Van Loffenberg, correct?
You can assume so.
And so can the committee, correct?
It may assume so.
Yes, thank you. And with that answer, I can also then assume that you differ with the these three judges, uh, Judge Bakwa, I think, the former public protector, Judge Windell and Judge Basson, when they say the public protector relies on this report, I'm reading at 113, despite explicitly stating that she has not seen the report. You also would disagree with that, correct?
Chair, I did not use the word explicitly stated in my affidavit.
Yeah, hence I'm asking. If you had used that word, I would not be asking you this question.
Yes.
I'm asking exactly because you seem to disagree with it. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. So there is a judgment, and the judges have expressed it in a particular way, and I'm sure that the public protector in her appeal is going to deal with that matter.
No, well, it's unlikely that the Constitutional Court will grant her appeal. I'm just saying to you, whatever happens in the appeal, as we sit now, do you agree or disagree with that sentence of the three charges? You've already, it's the same as, to give you a hint, it's the same as Mr. Van Lochenberg, with whom you've already disagreed. You know, in the quiz on radio, they give you a hint here. Yeah. Yeah. So, ask a friend.
So, but look, Mr. Chair, through the chair, I understand that Advocate Mpofu disagrees with this.
No, I don't.
No?
I have no view.
And that is his view. I stated my view. I have placed it in an affidavit. There is a particular judgment. It's worded in a particular way. It is up to the public protector to challenge that. And you may find errors in it. You may not find any errors in it.
So we okay. No, that's fine, Mr. Pillay. I'm afraid I'm going to sit on this one until you give me an answer. I'm saying to you, this should be simple. It shouldn't take us this long. There's a statement by Mr. Van Lochenberg, which you said you disagree with. There's a statement, exactly the same statement, word explicitly, emphatically in this context means the same thing from the three charges. But now you're having difficulty with saying you disagree with this one. I mean, does that make sense even to you?
So through the chair, I know what the advocate is trying to do. He's trying to pick on one or two particular instances and to generalize from that.
Right.
I am saying that the judgment differs from what we put in our affidavit, and I recognize that. And I'm sure that the public protector is going to raise that issue. So that's the, but I think that the real key issue that concerns us is that the public protector had a view on that report. We didn't have a copy of the report.
Now that much, unlike you, I'll concede that part. Did not have that report, but I was asking you something different. Sorry, Mr. Pillay.
And the second thing that I want to say is that the IGI put nothing before us. She didn't call me to an interview.
Mm-hmm.
She says she called me to an interview, and that's not true. She didn't. She came to our offices. We had a general discussion on how we should cooperate with what we thought was a genuine inquiry. And insofar as my matters are concerned, mm-hmm. that's for me, when it comes to the OIG report, are for me the very important things. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pillay. Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. If we may pause there, we'll take a break for lunch and be back at 2.
Okay. Recording. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Our lunch is a bit similar break. One.